live from the COVID safe studios of WNHH FM 103.5. This is Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. You know, unfortunately, New Haven's ticking with a lot of gunshots these days. Violence is up in New Haven, street violence, just as it is throughout the country.
Tick-tock gunshot.
Important context, but as we say, also non-excuse. And here's a man who never makes excuses, but has been all over this issue for the different waves. He's seen it before. He's seen the gunfire go up. I would argue he has personally helped the gunfire go down in the past. Now he's got a new role and a new way and some new ideas about how New Haven could get this scourge under control. Say good afternoon to Shafiq Abdu-Sabur, retired police sergeant, longtime activist, lifelong New Havener. He's now running for alder as a Democrat in Ward 28, Beaver Hills neighborhood. And in that capacity, this week, he stood with a lot of members of our community, one of the few very diverse groupings you'd see in New Haven, to come out with a 10-point plan for tackling the violence. Just a tiny bit of background on Shafiq and why he's a person who inspires me more than just about anybody on this planet. It was Shafiq who came up with the idea of street outreach workers plan in New Haven and made it happen, get people used to being the life with credibility to help the police solve problems. And this was back in other waves when we had spikes in violence like today, people getting shot. He took it personally that people were dying, that everyone should do something about it. He negotiated truces on the streets. There was one on Winthrop Avenue that stopped people from shooting each other. He did community organizations like CT Ribat taking the kids who are most in danger of being shot or shooting someone, found other things I'm going to do. Helped one year make sure Freddie Fixer went off safe by taking some people ready to rumble. Took them to a movie in Wallingford. The man has a lot of creative ideas. We're going to talk about his new idea. Shafiq, enough about you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Paul. Thank you for having me on the show.
Okay.
And thank you for that good introduction. I was hyped. I was like, who's that dude, man? Yo, who that dude? Hook me up with that guy.
So what's it like being a politician now? You spent your whole life trying to get politicians to do the right thing.
You know, I don't consider myself a politician. I don't consider myself running for politics. What I consider
myself... You just said something that everybody who's ever run for office has said.
Yeah, I know.
Just
I know,
thing
but
there,
you know
Shafiq.
What? I don't. I'm just... I'm going to tell you exactly how I've been coming into this role. My daughter, who is 22... and she's my campaign manager, Sal Abdu-Sabur. Many of you may know her. She's black, she's Muslim, she's queer.
They.
And she came to me after spending a year in L.A. doing a program or job called it's going to come to me.
She was doing theater, wasn't she?
Yes, art job, Public Allies. Music, yep. Doing Public Allies in L.A., in Compton. When she came home, I said, I want to sit down with you, talk to you, give her, you know, a little, was COVID and different things. And then I said, you know, I'm thinking about running for office. I'd like for you to be my campaign manager. She said, you know, I really don't know much about campaign stuff. I don't know. What is that about? She was still trying to get her own reset here. And I said, well, just give me a year. That's, you know, give me a year. Give me to the election. I'll do most of some of the groundwork. You just at least give me from, you know, February till November, and she committed to that. And as she stepped in the role, I definitely let her be in charge. And she said to me, she said, Abu, don't worry about being a politician. Don't worry about looking like you're going for votes. She said, just be your authentic you.
I agree with Sal about that.
I be honest with you, after coming out of 21 and a half years of policing and even having been retired for over 4 years now, you know, I was a police officer. So, you know, there is no authentic you when you work in law enforcement. There's the authentic law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And you following the rules and the regulations, policies, procedures, and whatever the format is of the law enforcement.
Can a law officer still be authentic to herself or himself and still
I think,
follow the rules?
I think you can, but I think you need...
Because they don't say you have to put your knee on the neck. They're not saying you have to
right,
be cold and stone-faced when you talk to
that's
people.
That's correct.
They let you give ices out to the kids in the park.
That's correct. So I think, to be honest with you, you need people like a cell in your life to remind you. And you know, not to make this all about my daughter, but
I do want to talk about that because you know why? I think that one of the strengths of people of our generation is when we put our egos aside, because it's human nature that we want to feel like we're important, that we've been there, so we kind of paid our dues and we know how to do things. And so often we're wrong.
That's correct.
That the people who have learned from us and also seen what we've done wrong bring new energy and ideas. So Sawa came home because of COVID.
That's correct.
Sawa was in her, what, early 20s?
22.
Already did a great neighborhood organizing project to help clean the streets during COVID.
That's correct. Freshen Up Friday.
I can tell you, as a reporter dealing with campaigns, she is as good as any campaign manager in town. And there are good ones in town. She already knows what she's doing. Well, yes. Someone knows doing it. I think it was they, right?
Right.
Goes by they. And, you know, I look at your other children. On the way here, I passed your son, who's a New Haven police officer.
Yes.
Who gave me this great smile as I'm going by. He's a construction site in Howe Street. And I'm thinking, what I love about the tradition you've spawned is that you're very outspoken. And yesterday when you had a press conference about your 10 days of crime, you let it rip.
Yes.
There was, like, decades of pain of what you saw as a black man. You defined it as a black man. To talk about the way we've discounted the lives of people being killed.
Yes.
The excuses we made in blaming the victim. Yes. And you universalized it,
yes.
And it came from your heart. You said, we do this with Jews, too. When there were attacks on Jews, we said, because they're not friendly enough.
That's right.
When women get raped, when LGBT people say they're acting conspicuous, you know.
That's right.
But
that's right.
You also were hardcore about the fact that 80 to 90% of people getting killed are black, and that's what this is about.
Numbers don't lie.
And that every time the story gets told,
that's right.
The first instinct, and I'm not immune from this, our first instinct is to try to find a reason.
That's right.
That somehow dials back to the person getting killed when there is nothing that justifies the person getting
That's
killed.
Right.
And 99% of the time, that wasn't even the reason.
That's right.
So I love how you inspire. So I looked at how you... So while you can have that righteous and focused critique of society, you've never let it get in the way of taking action. You were a cop.
Right.
And you were even in the police union.
Yes.
You were in an official police union, which in America right now, we would argue, even those of us who love labor unions and labor, the people on that side are all against police unions because they're making excuses for horrible behavior and using their political influence to not be accountable. But you got along with police union people and you fought for police rights as a union person to try to fix it.
Yes.
You have a next generation now where you have Sawa, who's in the arts and bringing new ideas how to do a political campaign. You got your son Ismail, who's going to be a good cop because he was a good guy. I remember when he was doing security, when he was like, always did it right. And so I do think we need to look at that next generation. But you're not out of the game yet, Shafiq. You're not 95 yet. You're what, like 56
or something? Never out of the game, man.
How old are you, 55?
54.
So you're running for Alder. You're bringing that new energy.
Yes.
And yesterday at a press conference where you said 10 ways to make immediate steps.
That's correct.
To try to get the violence under control.
Get us back on track.
And we're getting on track here on Dateline New Haven, WNHHFM, your home for community radio, 103.5, with Shafiq Abdu-Sabur, retired police sergeant and current candidate for Alder with his new 10-point plan. Let's get right into it.
Yes.
So I want to start with number 12. Is that okay?
I like it. Go ahead.
Number 12 didn't make it in the top 10, but you've told me this idea. And a lot of your ideas came from being a cop where you know you can't mandate certain things.
That's correct.
So you can't force a cop to like a kid and hang out.
That's correct.
But you were a cop with Holly Wazalewski, who's retired. And no one knew this until we eventually wrote about it because she let us. She wasn't bragging. She would, every month, hang out with a girl she met at Church Street South.
Yes.
And there used to be a Church Street South housing development.
That's right.
And just hang with the girl. Help her deal with some family problems, do some fun. And the girl stuck with her when she became a woman and had a good life. And not only because of Holly, but Holly was
clothes,
like...
She bought her Christmas presents. She did a birthday. She, you know,
and that wasn't isolated.
No.
And you talked to me, and I got to admit, I'm kind of disappointed it wasn't in your 10-point plan, where you would have a concentrated voluntary effort to have an officer mentor a kid for an hour a week. Maybe let the cop have that be paid time. I don't know. We look at the details, but you're going to commit that every hour, you're going to spend, every week, you're going to spend an hour.
Yes.
With some young person you've met on the job. Doesn't have to be someone in trouble, by the way. These
That's
things
right.
aren't just for people in trouble. It's for everybody. And you still like that idea? Because it wasn't on your top 10.
So I like that idea, Paul. The reason I did not include it. The reason it did not make top 10, because I believe that when you put something out there for the people under these circumstances. So our situation is egregious right now. It's dangerous. The city is dangerous, in my opinion. It's in chaos when it comes to safety. I want to give people something that has a winnability. And it is in my professional experience of having been in law enforcement and the way the department is running right now, that such an effort would likely not be able to be executed at this time. Number one, there is an acting chief.
The acting chief could be okay to say, gets a call from the mayor, say, hey, let me have an hour a week.
No, because there's just too many other broken components from the mayor's office throughout to the police department. So,
are you saying the police are broken right now?
Yeah. I'm saying that the systems that connect police in order to make them more effective are broken. So, for instance, you know, we're missing a CAO. We still don't have
chief administrative officer.
We have an acting one, but that department requires two. It requires an acting. It requires a CAO and a deputy.
Yeah.
Under these circumstances, with the level of police reform that's going on in the state of Connecticut, you're really pushing.
That's a good point. Because the CAO doesn't just oversee the police.
Correct.
The CAO oversees fire, sees public
policy. Budget.
You're in the weeds here. I love this.
You know, vision and different things. And the reason I can speak from this angle is because I sit on the Connecticut Legislative Task Force on policing. And I've been working on that almost for 2 years now. And we are really working on some very significant policy changes around laws that cause me to constantly be in contact with police leaderships around the state and FOP and so forth and so on.
What's FOP?
The Fraternal Order of Police. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of anxiety with law enforcement still, the rank and file around what's next, what do we do, how do we do this. So I felt like, you know what, if you throw something out there like mentoring and you've got crime, violent crime off the chain, and then you have an acting police, you got an acting CAO, so you're down one. We're not really sure what roles.
So you're saying that right now we got some media steps we got to take, and then we can get to the next step.
Yes, because we still got
Tomiko. Shafiq needs to come back to be chief. He get the department shored up. Thanks, Tomiko, for listening. I love when people Tomiko participate.
I actually grew up with Tomiko. She went to the other girls Catholic school. I went to Notre Dame, so I'd known her since we was. But you know, listen, we need.
So glad you both stayed in town.
We're at a different place right now, right? And so, you know, this is one of those. Not throwing shade at anybody, right? But we're at a time where we need like a police commissioner that have been appointed to actually be in the field. Like we need people showing up to these homicides. We need people showing up to the...
I've been a little skeptical of that. Just, I don't mean to like be negative, but the mayor shows up all these shootings, puts out a release saying someone was shot, and then the rest of the release is about how great he is in dealing with crime. No information about the shooting, no one having an understanding about the roots of violence. It becomes about him. The cops sometimes tell me, Shafiq, they feel these people hot dog it and get in their way when they're trying to deal with the crime scene.
Right. So here's what I would say. I'll speak on my perspective with like the commissioners. A commissioner, I remember Bishop Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the first times I really got a chance to engage him was at an accident up on Alden Avenue, and I believe it was Fountain Street when I was a patrol officer.
Near where he lived.
Yes. And this guy shows up, and he's kind of like, you know, looks like a little George Jefferson, if you know Bishop Brooks. And he's like, yeah. And he pulls out this. And after talking to him, and he was talking, I didn't know he was the commissioner. You know,
was he in the accident?
No. He was just stopped by. Somebody was hurt. He went to make sure everything was okay. And he's like, I'm the commissioner. And I was like, wow, this is like really cool. The commissioner comes out. It's like the movie, right? It's like Commissioner Gordon, right? So I was like, this is cool.
Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, like Commissioner Gordon.
By the way, I didn't know you were the drum major for the band. That's what Tomiko says.
Yeah, I was a drum major for it.
That
was
makes
actually
so
the,
much sense.
I was the first black drum major for Notre Dame. And I was the first orchestra director in the school's history. I was the orchestra director.
Yes. Conductor.
Conductor.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, but Shafiq, I think partly what you're saying, if I have it right, is that we got to do some stuff right away.
Yeah.
One of your 10 points yesterday, I found very interesting because it was such a right-away point. You said that we don't have enough detectives going after cases, and I hear that from detectives. So this came up at a different press conference, one of the mayor's 9,000 press conferences that are supposedly not about running for re-election, but about how he's doing something about crime. He had one the other day, and they took it as an insult to the current detectives when I said there aren't enough detectives, because I always hear that from them.
Yes.
They say, well, our detectives are working hard. Well, they're working three times as hard as they need
to.
But you brought up two points. One is that there aren't enough detectives, but also, while the chief of detectives is black, almost everybody who goes to investigate a crime is white.
That's correct.
And that not that white cops can't do as well as black cops, but you need all races.
That's right. That's
and
a
not
tool.
That you can never have a white person there. So you didn't say get rid of white detectives.
No.
Although that was
not
heard by some of our racist readers.
No.
No, God forbid.
Absolutely
but,
not.
But you did say add. And you had a very specific suggestion for adding.
Yes.
Which is that police officers who are not detectives get 90-day assignments
That's
on
correct.
Rotation. And they love it, by the way. I've
That's
talked
correct.
To a bunch of, like, they love that 90-day taste of detective work, lets them know if they want to be a detective long-term.
That's right.
And that right now you say we should immediately make 90-day assignments to cops.
That's right.
Officers of color to serve as detectives and be there, too. Tell me about that. From your experience, from your kids' experience, why does it matter to include cops of color, black and brown, but not to the exclusion of white cops
yes.
who are very good at their job? Why is it important to have cops of color investigating shootings and other crimes?
Yep. So, you know, I will say, you know, first off, people say, are you pro cop or what do you do? No, I'm not pro police. I'm pro resources. I'm pro resources. I am a retired officer. I will never be able to give up that title. It's a part of who I am. I spent the majority of my adult life in law enforcement. So it's
that to me goes adding the tests or barriers. Someone who might be a good detective might not do well on an oral test where they have certain cultural biases.
Right. So what I will say, you know, I know many of the officers there. They work hard. I know how the detective bureau work. I was actually a detective in 98. I was a burglary detective, and I also investigated homicides. But then, if you remember, in 2006, 2007, I was appointed to the chief's office by Mayor DeStefano, and my number one job was homicide investigations. I was the person to show up on all of those shootings for 2 years to figure out those gun crimes. So I know how that process works. What I know, and I have fact-checked this through detectives and leadership inside of the Bureau, that having a minority officer or a officer for a specific crime is part of the toolkit. Listen, there's training that says when you go to the scene of a sexual assault of a female, sometimes it's better to have a female
officer.
And again,
just to be clear, this becomes like people are saying white cops can't do it. Obviously, we have very good white detectives, I mean, who happen to be white. Right?
That's
right. So like the case of the Yale graduate student who was killed, if you read that 96-page warrant,
that's right.
They did some awesome
Absolutely.
Work. Like Liz White did some ballistics work.
Yeah.
David Zawiski.
I copied it. I made a copy of it as a...
But what you're saying is that different circumstances, different people feel comfortable talking to different people.
Paul.
And also and having contacts in a community
yes.
and knowing people.
It's a tool. Listen.
Have you been at scenes where there were only white officers and black people were involved and they weren't talking to
talking anybody.
And then you showed up.
Yeah,
what
absolutely.
Happened?
Absolutely. Come here, yo. Come here, dog. Let me holler at you. You know, and more strikingly.
And then sometimes the white officer will have those relationships,
yes,
too. But
and more
there are situations when.
Yeah. So let me add this point. More strikingly, you know, I take my cues from my direct experience working with Holly Wazalewski, who we started off
white.
As patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended as a captain. Holly's white, blonde hair, blue eyes. They call her nickname in the hill when we walked was Barbie. Right? It was Barbie. When we walked around and then later in our careers as we did stuff, people responded to Holly not because she was blonde and blue in the Barbie thing. She knew them.
Well, obviously the big case was
right
before she retired, there was an African-American gentleman you and I both know who was making threats and going around. There was a manhunt and then he was holed up. Actually, this happened twice in her last few years.
Right.
Black New Haveners said, I will only come out peacefully if Holly comes.
That's right.
So that's to say that a white person can be a cop, too. It's not anti-white.
Right.
But there are cases, right, where someone will talk only to someone.
That's
like a
correct.
Woman only to a woman.
So in my 2000
or
book.
Or speaking Spanish, you know.
Right. In my 2000 book, A Black Man's Guide to Law Enforcement in America, there's a chapter that I wrote called You Don't Have to Be a Black Cop to Understand the Black Community. Right. And that chapter was all about my experiences working with white officers.
And Ed Trimble, who knows a lot about this, says my girls.
When people trust the community, when the community trusts the police and have a relationship, which is why I mentioned walking beats, then people will come out. When you are a detective, and when you have a detective bureau, and when you're a police department, you want to have every tool at your disposal to be able to solve that crime in the most expeditious fashion as possible. Yes, you could do it with a homogenous group of detectives, and you can run with that, but it's going to slow it down. And we can't forget the atmosphere that we're in and what we've come out of.
So just to be clear, you're not talking about denying any opportunity to a white cop. You're not saying a white cop can't deal with other people. You're saying there have to be others in the mix.
There have to be others
in the mix. Which gets to another one of your points. So one of your points was these 90-day assignments for detectives of color, specifically black cops, because there are Hispanic in there. A second one was about leadership. So yeah. We have something happened very fast this year. It wasn't true in 2020. But in 2021, something happened very fast after the mayor made a certain appointment, right. Which is that for the first time since 1993, in all the top ranks, everybody's white.
Yeah.
So chief, assistant chief, captain, every single person is white. Yeah. And then even in lieutenants, there's one Latino person, no one black, and one Asian, Asian Pacific Islander. And then what you brought up yesterday, we have 10 community policing districts with 12 groups that meet. Two of them get divided in two.
Yes.
Not a single district manager is black, but the city, depending on your estimate, you believe, is somewhere around a third black, a little more.
Yes.
So you were saying some of these people in leaderships need to be black. When everyone getting shot, with a few exceptions, is black.
It makes no sense.
When 100 people a year getting shot are black. Now, tell me more about that again. What is the and Ed Trimble, who's black, says it doesn't matter the color. People have to understand their inherent biases, what they bring, understanding our differences. And he also says we need you in the city. We got him in the city. We just got him in different roles. Shafiq, the testing is a solid barrier, says Tamiko. We're going to be hearing a lot about that starting next week with the lieutenant's test. But Shafiq, what are you saying then? Are you saying we should have a set number of district managers?
So here's what
I'm saying. We should have someone in leadership who's black?
What I'm saying is the city has to look at public safety overall. And this is a shout out not just to the police department in terms of we need to look at the policing hiring to promotion to recruitment or recruitment to promotion. We need to look at fire from recruitment to promotion. Again, I'm just going to go back to this because I can't, you know, it would be disrespectful for me and many of my colleagues that I work with at the state. When you're missing components in the city, government and city management and different things, you're going to have this kind of stuff.
How does it happen? That
so
10 district managers out of 10.
So here's what happens. This is where let the chips fall where they may. When I was in the department and I wanted to be a district manager, Chief Esterman was the chief. He had his viewpoint on how he wanted things to be. I had to fight like hell to become the district manager in Newhallville. I wanted to be the district manager downtown, but the downtown management team, the people that like control the green, did not want a black district manager. And I'm just going to call it what it is. Period.
There's always been something kind of creepy.
So they didn't want
right below the surface
about
that.
They didn't want
a
black district manager. Yeah. So Esterman came back to me and said, "I got something better for you." They were going to move me in another division in the city to do something bigger and better, they said. But I didn't want that. I wanted to be a district manager. So then an opening came up in Newhallville. I had to apply. I applied to be the district manager in Newhallville. They came back to me and said, "Well, we decided that we're going to reopen up the application process again because you were the only one that applied." I said, "Well, if I'm the only one that applied to be the district manager, nobody wants it but me. What is this all? Oh, we got to meet with this one. We got to meet..." They didn't want me to be the district manager there. But finally, I got in to become the district manager. Part of one of the issues was because a district manager is a pathway to assistant police chief. Mm. And there's certain neighborhoods downtown in Newhallville, in East Rock.
Those and by the way, let's just call it. Downtown, the cops are supposed to harass black kids.
Those two assignments.
That's the assignment to be downtown cops.
Those two assignments, which is D1 and D7.
D1 is downtown, D7
East. Are the pathways to assistant police chief. Louis Casanova, my dear friend and classmate, was the downtown district manager. He became the assistant chief.
Renee Dominguez was 7.
She came
but only for 5 minutes.
Doesn't matter. Came in after me under 7 because it's the stats of the numbers of the population. See, it's an asset.
But you got to be the district manager. And of course, all the kumbaya liberals at the Independent loved everything you did. You gave ICs to the kids.
But help me out. But then, when Reyes took over, they said they were going to turn all the district manager spots, because I was a sergeant. They were going to turn all the spots what they call white shirts, which was lieutenants. And when I inquired, why are we doing that? It was like, oh, that's just what we're going to. That's not a general order. It's not in the police structure policy of the union contract of the Board of Police Commissioners, nothing. That is a personal decision by the chief. So the chief made that decision, just like Lewis made
that
decision.
But you became the...
I was out. I got pushed out. That's how I got pushed out.
But you had been.
Yeah, I had been the district
manager. So what's interesting about when you were the district manager, I just had a few observations. Yeah. So, of course, you did all the groovy kumbaya stuff that people, the liberals, the independent love. So we gave you the stories. You put in a little library. You gave the cops are giving out ICs. One thing I found really interesting is that you were very excited. You had cops of color who were doing a good job.
Yes.
You were also very excited about some of your white officers.
Absolutely.
You used to call me and tell me about them, say, do an article about
Absolutely.
This officer, the kid, the guy's
Shumway.
Going.
Shumway. Officer Shumway.
We
He's
just started
him
reading to the kids
Absolutely.
In the school.
Absolutely.
That's why I always think it's so hard to talk about race, because
Absolutely.
It's always seen as a zero-sum game, whereas if you do accept the fact that there's a reason to have things be more equitable, there are ways to yeah. do it that don't
Community
have to make people
engagement.
Defensive.
Listen.
You can appreciate the value of another person and also see the need for additional people to
That's
have
right.
the same opportunity.
Listen, it's community engagement policing. I had white officers under my command. I loved them just like I love my black officers. And I made sure that they was engaged with that black community.
It's possible to love all people and still understand that there's racism. You want to deal specifically with racism as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You That's
know,
a hard
and here's
thing
the other thing.
About
here's, a, here's the other thing. It's possible to understand all people and not love the racism that's in them, too.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm
Just
saying?
Just like we sometimes don't like some of our own biases.
That's right. So, I mean, this thing is years in the, is what I'm telling you.
Your 10-point plan.
No.
Oh, that was going to be my segue to station
ID. If you can call
ID.
It like the whitening of the department, is a year in the making.
But what's new this year is the upper ranks.
Yeah,
because the upper ranks were not whitened.
Right. But again, I go back. You know, this is a thing that started under Esterman. Mm. Okay. This is a. So I'm not going to, you know.
Well, he did have assistant yeah. chiefs of color.
Listen.
And they
this
became
is a,
the chief.
Let me tell you something. The assistant chiefs and the chiefs are appointed.
Right. Oh, so the mayor has a say.
Okay.
Wants to run for election.
The rank and file, you got to earn your way up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This thing here, I'm telling you now, started on Esterman because I was the president
You were there.
Of the National
Yeah.
Association
Yeah.
of Black Law Enforcement Officers, where I got stuck in detention because they wanted me in detention.
Just so our listeners know, you weren't locked up. You were overseeing
No,
the
was,
detention
I
was, facility.
I was overseeing the detention. So for our listeners out there, if you're assigned back then, if you were assigned to detention, it was like the doghouse assignment.
And there's somewhere I don't want to go with that.
Right,
it doesn't involve you.
It's the doghouse
yeah.
assignment. So, you know, I was told then, well, you're the president of the black cops. You got too much power. They don't want you on the street talking with other officers because you're starting stuff up.
You were against the culture.
Right, so they put me in detention.
But now
right.
you have a 10-point plan
yeah.
to change the culture and the facts on the ground, and we're talking about that.
That's what we're talking about.
On Dateline New Haven, what channel?
103.5 FM.
What's it called?
New Haven Independent.
No. Oh, it's who runs it, but WNHH
FM. WNHS FM.
New Haven's yeah. home for community. It's okay, you passed the test, because Tomiko yeah. Art MacArthur is saying the tests are biased. We
yeah.
just graded the test so that you got 100.
Yeah.
So, Shafiq, we're talking about you're running for Alder. You had a plan out. We have uptick in violence in our city.
Yes.
We've had 15 homicides already this year. We
yeah.
used to have many years, but that's 15 the whole year. And not just the homicides. We have 48 shootings last year. We had over 100. No,
yeah.
we didn't have over 100. Yeah, I guess we did have over 100 last year, right?
And we can't,
or 98.
And here's the thing. So I want to say with an emphasis. You know, it's almost like in Spanish, you have a tilde. You have a tilde. You emphasize that, right? Tarde with the tilde. So 15 homicides right now, Paul. We got a serious problem in the city. Why do we have a serious problem in the city? Last year we only had 20.
But even that was a high number. That was
and
an
20
that
was for the whole year.
And that was an increase.
So we're only 5 away from last year's
And the
high.
Shootings, the more important number. The non-fatal shootings are up way above where
yes,
they were. We had
yes.
gone down.
We're on pace. We're looking.
And look at that 15th homicide. That was a gentleman, 21-year-old individual on the Hill, who last August that stood next to his brother, a boxer, who was shot dead in front of him.
Yes.
We don't have the inside information. We have something to lead us believe they might be linked. So these are related.
Yes.
But anyway, so Shafiq, you had a 10-point plan. We talked about your plan to have 90-day assignments of black and Latino officers to temporarily in the detective bureau. Another plan I found really interesting, another plank in your plan, was that landlords... You know, we have landlords that own a lot of property in the city, right?
That's right.
Sometimes
That's right.
we're kind of hard on them because they deserve it. But they're making a lot of money. They could set aside an apartment for, I would argue, for free. This isn't your plan because you talk to them, you're trying to get it done.
Right.
They can set aside apartments that a cop can live here. So that way the cop is in the community. The cop benefits by getting a lower rent. It's not mandatory, right? Because we always get in trouble when we try to mandate these rules. This is if you want to do it. You make opportunities to make things good. The cop can live in the community, get to know people who live in the community, and live either for free or reduced.
Yes.
And Edward Trimble says they do care. I've been thought already. All right. Thank you, Edward Trimble. Shafiq, your plan is reduced rent.
So,
and you've said that there are landlords who've told you.
Yes.
That they will participate in a plan to give New Haven police officers reduced rent to live in the city.
Yes.
You didn't produce any of these landlords. I chased him under the back. He said he's not one of them.
No, there's not. So, you know, just in respect to, you know, as I'm trying to build this partnership team.
So you're throwing the idea for now.
Yeah, with people. What I will say is this. I do have the commitments. I have pledged to them that I would not disclose their name.
But if there's certain people, you need only one commitment because they have thousands of apartments.
So here's the concept, right? So here's what I want to bring the concept. My concept is always about community development and community wellness. Mm-hmm. And yes, I think we can all be, very honest. There are a lot of Jewish investors that have large, some amounts of
subset
property.
Of Jewish. Not I'm Jewish, not people I go to shul with.
Right, but you understand.
There's a group of people who are bringing other people there to
correct.
Buy real estate.
So here's what I'm saying. My plan is not targeting a specific investor. What I want to get is the concept out there.
Well, but you have a lot of these investors in that ward.
No, but
so
here,
this
actually
is an
out.
Older issue.
But hear me out. For instance, there may be somebody, what I've noticed, and I noticed this from knocking on doors in Beaver Hills, right? I'm knocking on doors where there's an 80-year-old person that lives there by themselves, right? And you go find that somebody is actually living in the second half of their home because they're older and it just gives them a tenant
assistance.
And assistance. So what I'm saying, hey, we know my mother's 70, right? She has a raised ranch, but if my mother was 70 and she had a two-family house, I would say, Ma, why don't you rent a house to a police officer or a firefighter?
Aren't you also the people who own a lot of apartments saying have one of your units reserved?
Absolutely.
So now you're saying there are these unidentified secret landlords who have told you, Shafiq, if this plan gets going, and if you get this done, man, I would say that's more an older candidate has ever accomplished in my memory. He just hasn't even had office yet. If you get these landlords to sign on and say, I'm going to give reduced rent.
Yes.
So what do you need from the police department?
So what I would need from the police department, and so I'm going to not act like I'm inventing the wheel. The police department currently has a
public housing,
a resident office.
But at most they have like one at a time, right?
No. So when there was more public housing, there was more, you know, officers out there, different units. Jeanette Miles used to be over at the one off of Worcester Square.
The officer who got fired last year, he had been living in one.
Yeah, so, right. So we've always had officers there. So what I'm suggesting is just taking that same model, right, and same paperwork.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Right?
You're taking a good model and expanding it.
And just expand it into the private sector. Yeah. So,
Ward 28, like you're not a big public housing ward.
That's correct.
But you do have a lot of moderate and lower and upper income. You have a really diverse level in your ward. You have a lot of apartments owned by larger landlords who also live in your ward other apartments. So you're saying you would like to have more cops living in your neighborhood.
That's right. And here's the other part. We know that we have people buying homes in the city that, and I just be real about it. People are buying houses and they're going to flip them, but they're not ready to flip them yet. So rather than have them sit there vacant, remodeled, why not rent that home to a police officer?
Because then the officer has to move in 6 months when the market before it drops.
Well, that's fine. I mean, but, you know, here's the reality of it. We have a lot of police officers.
You love capitalism. See, that's the problem with capitalism to me.
But we have a lot of officers that come on the job. They're still living with their parents.
Mm.
Right? They're out of college. Some of them, they're young.
I see. Okay.
You know what I mean? So they haven't declared a home yet. You know, I'll use my son.
So cops living in the community.
Yeah, that's all.
Positive, voluntary,
engaged
community who want, like landlords have self-interest in a safer community. So it's a win-win, which
that's
is
right.
great. Another one you had, now you talk about year-long day and night walking beats.
Yes.
Now that's happening this summer temporarily with some money, just like we had that program called Savvy a few years ago when you get one.
Yeah.
Now there are people who are critical of the walk and beat idea. I'm thinking John Valeca, who was the chief, Tony Reyes, who say that made sense in the 90s when we had tons of cops.
Still makes sense.
And I think it does too. But
how do your officers...
I want to give you the devil's advocate argument. Okay?
All right.
Because I'm with you. You and I agree about
this.
We think community policing, an essential part was having... beat cops. You get to know when there's not a problem.
Do I have to call, call on my African angels right now to debate the devil? Is that what you're
But other people say, look, we don't have that many cops. And they do have to get this.
That's not my issue.
And let me think something else. And that a cop, Valeka always says, a cop who's a good cop will get out of her car and talk to people.
That's
cop who's a bad cop, you can force that cop to be a walking cop, and they're going to hide in the alley or go have a sandwich and not talk to anybody. So that it's more how you train them and use your resources flexibly. I'm still on your side, by the way. I respect that other point of view. They're saying that, you know, as times change, you have to update the revolution. So we saw you and I were watching community policing facing it earlier. You helped make the policy. They're saying now we get technology we use more, which has pros and cons. We have different kinds of crimes. Drug dealings and on the street as much as in housing, although it's sometimes in the streets. And that it's more about intelligence and flexibility with how the cop operates. And that it's very cost heavy to have everyone walking where you cover less ground.
Here's what I'm going to say. Nothing replaces relationships except personal relationships. Policing is a relationship.
So you're saying fund the police because you need a lot of wrong cops, but you also want more detectives.
Policing is a relationship profession. One of my mentors, Francisco Ortiz, the police chief, he called me in his office one day when I was working in the chief's office, and he said, big man, you know, he called me, big man. He said, listen, let me tell you something, big man. He said, this job is all about relationships. And what I'm telling every police officer out there, this job is all about,
and you're saying you need to be walking.
Imagine wanting to be married. Me and my wife will be married 29 years, God willing. We live till the 27th of this month, next Sunday, I think it is.
You're going to be living to your 60th anniversary.
But here's the thing, Paul. Imagine I want to be married to my wife or my partner. And I'll go with meeting them online and talking to them on the phone and expect that we're going to stay married for 10 years, but never meet them face to face. Never see their facial expressions. Never be in their environment. You cannot have automated policing. There's no such thing.
And you're saying you got to be in person.
You got to be on the ground. I spoke with a sergeant the other day. I don't want to say her name, but a wonderful sergeant. She started off as an intern from UNH, and now she became a police officer, and now she's a sergeant. Here's the deal. That's why I told her, nothing replaces experience as an officer like street experience.
And often, you know, you've heard this much more than I have. Detectives will tell me, or you read their report, that it was a neighborhood officer who provided a key piece of information for the investigation.
You got to be on the real. Listen, and you know, here's a part about this. Walking beats is not about enforcing crime. It's about preventing crime through the relationship. I cannot tell you
so how. So what about in limited resources? Like, what if
the
you
limited,
have to,
listen.
Like,
the
I remember I watched Chief lower ranks.
No, Paul, hold on a second.
And I have to make a choice.
Want to jump your microphone because I love
jump
you.
Jump it, man.
Paul, not having enough cops, not having enough police officers in the city is not the city of New Haven residents' problem. That's a city problem. The residents of New Haven,
the
residents of New Haven last year did not vote to take $4 million.
And they didn't take $4 million. That's a myth.
$3
million? Nope.
$2
million? And that $2 million is a myth.
Okay.
So the mayor was responding to Black Lives Matter.
Right.
So he's pretending that he was cutting the police department.
Okay.
He wasn't. There were $2 million in unfilled positions that weren't going to be filled soon.
Mm-hmm.
So a press release went out and said, look, I cut the police, when he didn't really. Then he, like the rest of the politicians in the world, with good faith, discovered that the fund, the police might have been the slogan of demonstrations, but in fact, that was not popular, including in neighborhoods of color.
Right.
So all of a sudden, they were all for funding the police. That $2 million is a fake issue.
Right. So here's the thing, though. The money was put out there that it was taken away. I talked with the president of the police union.
I know, and he did that kind of Trump
only,
thing.
Only,
about it.
I can tell you this. I talked with the president. I talked with Florencio Cotto 4 weeks ago. And he was in a meeting and said the budget had been cut, as of right now, $4 million.
But it's not true. If you look at it, Shafiq, they can't fill these ranks fast enough.
So here's
my
point.
They have classes where they're hiring
cops. Right. So here's my point. What we should have did last year, instead of talking about how we're cutting back and all this other stuff, we could have rode off the energy of Black Lives Matter.
I agree.
Created an advisory board for police accountability and community policing, focusing on hiring, focusing on recruitment, hiring and screening. Okay, and getting those community members that were concerned involved in that process.
I agree that.
Right? Let me remind and people. We could have built up the ranks with people that looked like people of the city, that was from the city, that made people feel more comfortable.
And I do want to seg to this larger question about what was the Black Lives Matter moment and what is it today? And we're doing that on Dateline New Haven. On what channel is that again?
WNHHLP 103.5 FM, where you will hear.
Oh, New Haven's home for community radio.
Home for community radio.
With Shafiq Abdu Support joining us on Dateline New Haven, talking about the future and the present of policing. So last summer, Black Lives Matter was a beautiful moment, in my opinion. Yes. Like, for 7 minutes, all of America, of all races, embraced the idea that Black Lives Matter. But pretty soon, the noise machine distorted what that slogan meant.
Yeah.
But there was this moment, and I remember in my own yippy-dippy thinking, I was thinking there could be a grand bargain between officers who were opposed to the rhetoric and the marches, who actually, in my opinion, agreed with the marchers. So hear me out.
Yeah.
I think everyone agreed that cops are left without training to deal with problems that aren't the problems cops should deal with.
That's correct.
That they really don't, like when Dave Runlitz shot dead that mentally ill person in the elevator and he didn't technically break a rule on Howard Avenue, he shouldn't have been there in the first place, and that's not a knock on him in this case.
And none of the officers were given mental health services.
So in other words, why couldn't we get everyone together and say, and I think that's because I'm too much kumbaya, and the real world doesn't work this way because racism gets in the argument, and race is important because there is racism in policing. But on the merits of what people were demanding, it seemed to me that everybody in the world agreed that we want cops to do cops' jobs.
That's right.
And not to be... Because what I always hear, like, you and I very much, and I think we still are, in favor of, like, Yale Child Study working with cops problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And the people who are against that always say, and the people who hated Black Lives Matter said, we're not social workers, we're cops. But Black Lives Matter is saying, you're not going to be social workers either.
That's right.
And so we do have a consensus that we do these community crisis teams that New Haven's trying. But the truth is, where you can develop people to go with emergency calls, like mental health practitioners, they're still only saying that in the best scenario, that's only 10% of calls.
When you don't have a plan for police, you have a plan for failure, for community engagement. That's what I'm going to say.
So now let's talk about what should come out of Black Lives Matter now that it's the morning after and half America went back to just thinking Black Lives don't matter and finding excuses for that, and the movement itself is fractured and defund the police means five things to different people. What do we take from that next?
So here's what I will say. I will say that I am not the appropriate person to answer that question because Black Lives Matter means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. I can tell you from my heart, Black Lives Matter to me means how I can be a part of using my knowledge and expertise in helping in police reform to make policing to be something that is more productive to protect black and brown people opposed to trying to regiment their space and relegate their space. I can tell you for me, Black Lives Matter means that I have to come out publicly, passionately, and with my heart and soul to speak out against gun violence in our black and brown communities and call out the numbers. Call out the fact that 82% of the black people that got shot in our city last year and that continue to get shot are only black men. 82%. That of all the women that got shot and killed last year, all of them were black women. You know, and the fact that we continue on right now as we speak at a higher rate, 80 to 85% of black men getting shot and killed. So my Black Lives Matter says, what can I do as a black man, as a black father, as a black husband, uncle, grandfather, former police officer, person running for office, what can I do to get that message in a very specific way to help us all understand how this is impacting black people? So from my position, that's what I'm working on. I think that we are in a new era of movement, and I think the best thing that we can do as Americans is not try to figure out where we need to put that movement. We don't need to try to silo the voices of black and brown, Hispanic, Latino, LGBTQ people, and people from all races that want to band together to make a change. Let them make that change. Let that play out the way it needs to play out. Let us all go back and look at the scope of our duties for the job we signed up on and making sure we're checking off all the boxes. Let's make sure that the broken connections that we have that are supposed to help our police departments to function better, let's connect those bridges so we can get the resources across so that we can have a clear view about what we really want our police department to do. We are where we are now because good, bad, or indifferent, money actually came out and money didn't actually came out. We played around with a budget number that sent a different message to police officers. Police officers reacted to that.
People were mean to the police officers.
Right. They reacted to things that was happening on a national scale, and we did not set a plan for police officers. Currently, right now, I'm working on legislation where we're looking to strike, God willing, if the state elected officials support it through our task force, we're looking to strike nearly 400 motor vehicle laws into what is called a secondary enforcement.
So hey, tell me about that again. Let's walk it back. We only have a few minutes.
Gotcha.
What's the name of the group you're on?
Which group? Oh, the police task force. What is it?
The state legislature, in the wake of Black Lives Matter, set up a group of people they consider having real insight and knowledge from all different backgrounds to try to come up with a plan to bring justice and updating to our criminal code, correct?
Yes.
You're a member of that, along with legislators, experts, and people correct. All
police
different
Police chiefs, exactly.
And so you've talked about this, and this is fascinating. You got in the weeds, and you said a lot of this has to do with motor vehicles.
Yes.
What did you find out, and what are you trying to change?
So we're trying to strike all the equipment violations off the motor vehicle code. So somebody doesn't get behind you and pull you over for a headlight being out, for your brake light being out, for the fuzzy dice hanging from the window, from a sticker or your license plate being tilted. I mean, I know that this is a history of the war on drugs, and this is a way to get in your car.
So you're saying that pretext motor vehicle stops, like when State Supreme Court Justice Fleming Norcott, who happens to be black, made the mistake of wearing sweats on a Sunday and he drove That's his right. nice car, he gets stopped on a motor vehicle pretense. You want to end that?
That's correct. So right now we're looking at an analyst, right? Analyst says that should we be able to strike these 400 equipment violations into a secondary code, we could potentially reduce unnecessary motor vehicle stops by nearly 100,000 stops, of which many of these stops are the stops that signify or are characteristic of racial profiling.
And when we look at a lot of the deaths at the hands of police of black men and women in this country in the last couple of years, a lot of those will be revealed.
Absolutely.
So let me give you the other side again. Again, I agree with Shafiq, but let's hear the devil's advocate. A lot of times those stops are also where they find the gun. So a cop has a sixth sense. Remember, D4, I consider this the D4 phenomenon, yeah. Detroit, Kensington. Yeah. A lot of gun violence in that neighborhood, and they say we want, quote, aggressive policing,
yeah.
meaning that you take, or they don't say aggressive, they say you take initiative. Yeah. You have a hunch there's something going on with that car.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you stop them on the pretense that you're trying to stop, and then they find the gun. They mm-hmm. find, they say, someone would have died if we didn't do that.
Yeah.
Now, Harry Farris says, I'm trying to read it, that we have to eliminate barriers to affected African growth and development. We need workers and human behavior to be involved. Police should be allowed to protect and serve. All this and more must usher in transformative healing and doors of equality open to all. Thank you very much for adding that comment. So, Shafiq, what do you say to the D4 cop who says, I got a hunch, you want to take away my ability to make these stops that have saved lives by ended up getting mm-hmm. a gun?
I'm going to say an Asian MIT student came into New Haven and allegedly executed a Yale student. He then drove away in a car with stolen plates. He got stopped in North Haven.
And they checked his plates.
The plates were stolen.
In a private, it's worse. Just,
let me answer your question. Let me answer your question. Let me answer your question.
He was in a junkyard trespassing, acting fishy.
Okay.
And they let him go.
And they took the plates and gave the tow truck driver gave him a ride to the hotel, allegedly. And
that's not alleged. That's true.
And now we find that he's accused of being the murderer of, you know, this vicious
they
crime.
They let him get away.
Of this vicious crime.
And dumped the gun.
And the gun was dumped. So what I'm saying is, that's why I'm saying these motor vehicle laws need to be made secondary, because they have no nexus to community safety. They have no direct nexus to community safety.
So you're saying it's a pretext that has too much of a racial.
Absolutely.
Shafiq Abdu-Sabir, we've come to the close of our time.
Thank you, Paul.
It's a shame because you were just getting going.
Yeah, you know.
It was and like, you are just getting going. You're running for alder in the 28th Ward of New Haven.
Yeah.
And you're trying to bring the
fight of my life, man. A fight of my life.
You're trying to bring Harvey Fair airs that we should focusing on the gun as a distraction, focus on the root causes. Thank
yes.
you.
Brother Harvey.
You're just getting started. You're going to yes. take a lifetime of work in law enforcement and outside of law enforcement in the community, trying to keep law enforcement accountable. and in law enforcement trying to figure out how to make it work better.
But we're going to do this as a community, Paul.
All right.
We're going to do this as a community.
And we did this as a show. And Edward Trimble says he's a good guy. So are you, Edward
Trimble. Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. You know who's a really good guy?
You are.
Well, I was thinking of Harry Droz.
Okay, Harry's
He's the
good.
Station manager.
Harry's my dude.
He makes it work on 90 platforms.
Yes, he does.
You remember we learned in math, like there's an exclamation point after the 9. That means factorial
yes,
when you compute.
Yes, yes.
Harry does factorial. He gets us in like so many dimensions yeah. of web platforms, yeah. streaming, audio,
I got a better one. Harry's the 2 in H2O.
Ooh.
Ooh, you like that, huh?
All right.
That's that stim.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. Thanks, Shafiq Abdu-Sabur.
Thank you for
having
me.
Thanks to program and station manager, Harry Droz. Thanks to everyone who put in questions and statements. That added a lot to the show. And so I'm going to, it's Paul Bass. We're taking it out with I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free by the Afro-Semitic Experience. I'm inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night. WNHH, as Shafiq said. NHH, New Haven's home for community radio.
LP, baby.